Thank you. Sylvia Sparks, on behalf of the petitioner, may it please the court. There are three or four questions for this court. The first one being whether Mr. Salguero Sosa suffered, the harms that he suffered amount to persecution, whether the harms that he suffered were on account of a protected ground, whether the agency applied an incorrect legal standard, and whether the petitioner formed part of a disfavored group.
Counsel, before we go any farther, can I ask you, do you want to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Judge, I'll reserve 2 minutes.
Very well. Please proceed.
Okay, thank you. And when we look at the evidence viewed in its totality and the cumulative effects that it had on Mr. Salguero, we can see that any reasonable fact finder would find, would be compelled to find that he did suffer persecution. So he suffered severe and pervasive discrimination.
Why would we have to conclude that? Because again, this court has said that persecution means something more than discrimination or harassment. And it's clear that he suffered discrimination, and it's also clear that he probably suffered harassment. But did he suffer more than that?
Yes, Judge, he suffered severe and pervasive discrimination beginning from his childhood going all the way up to—
Let me stop you. I'm conceding discrimination. I'm conceding harassment. But
right.
As this court has said, discrimination and harassment is not persecution.
Right, but if it's severe and pervasive, then it can amount to persecution. And if it's combined with death threats and also physical attacks, and you look at the cumulative effect of all these things happening to Mr. Salguero Sosa, then it would be enough to amount to persecution.
Even though those particular incidents are not from the one source or not for even one reason, but are from myriad different sources for myriad different reasons, you're still saying that it constitutes persecution, even though individually they're only acts of discrimination or harassment.
Well, some of them are yes, I mean, I agree that some of the acts on their own would not be a persecution, but when we look at everything, and this court's precedent is to look at the cumulative effect of everything that's been happening to him, then we look to see if there is sufficient persecution.
Let me ask you this, counsel.
Yes.
What is your best case or cases that say if you have a series of what on an individual basis constitute discrimination, that in the aggregate, that's enough to change the result here? In other words, what's your best right. cumulative effect case that will get you where you think you want to go?
Right. I think, Judge, that this case has similarities to Corablina. In Corablina, she was also denied admission to a polytechnical school for being Jewish. She was she did work for 30 years in an automated machine factory. She encountered obstacles for career advancement. She witnessed some beatings from her boss. She was only encountered one time with physical violence. And there, the agency also found that all she had suffered was discrimination. But this court found that looking at everything that she had suffered cumulatively, that all of these effects did amount to persecution. This is very similar to Mr. Salguero Sosa because he was also denied admission. He also didn't have career advancement. He was persecuted in employment.
But let me stop you, counsel. Counsel, yes. In your client's case, he did achieve the heights of his profession in various ways. He was very very successful. Now, he may have been more successful if he hadn't been discriminated against, but he was extremely successful.
He wasn't able to work as an accountant where he had received his degree. He didn't receive any benefits, medical benefits. He didn't get any raises or promotions when he worked at the water park. So he didn't get the career advancement that he was entitled to. This was very similar to Corablina. And also another form of persecution that is not found in Corablina, which is, I think, much worse, is that he was forced to terminate his pregnancy with his girlfriend. And under our asylum law, a forced termination of pregnancy.
Let me stop you. That decision was made by her parents. It wasn't made by any
government. They were living together. Yes, but private persecutors can also be persecution. We have this under Doe versus Holder, where there were private persecutors persecuting the individual because of his homosexuality. And this court found that it is still a form of persecution because it's on account of a protected basis.
Counsel, let me ask you this. Let's say that you're right about Corablina. What do we do with this? Do we send it back? Do we make a de novo decision? What do we do in this circumstance? If you're right, In this case, the IJ specifically said, and the BIA too, we're not going to apply cumulative review. So what's the remedy here?
Well, the remedy is, I believe, is to remand so that the agency can apply the correct legal standard.
And won't they just say, you know, we went through this before, we know what these individual things are, and we don't think there's any difference at all. So then where are we?
Well, if that's the case, you could still look at the withholding claim, which shows that the agency applied the incorrect legal standard. Instead of saying, looking at, is there a reason for his persecution? They looked at just a central reason. In addition, does he have a fear of future persecution because he belongs into a disfavored group? So they missed a bunch of things in this case on remand that could be remedied.
And what's your best reason as opposed to the larger factor? We've now said a reason is enough. What's your best reason?
The best reason is his particular social group. There is no doubt that he was persecuted because he was a little person. Through all facets of his life, there was lots of determinations. They explicitly told him that he was not being admitted to school because of his size, that he was not getting the job because of his size, that they wanted to terminate his pregnancy because he was going to be a dwarf grandchild, that he wasn't going to get a driver's license because of his size, that everything points to the fact that because he's a little person, he was being persecuted. So this is for sure a reason for his persecution.
Well, let me ask you, if it's a situation where, let's assume that we use a different term than persecution, let's just say use the term discriminated against, there is no common actors in this regard, and there's no evidence that the government or any group that the government is refusing to control is engaging in this discrimination. It's just simply a widespread, public sentiment against people of a particular stature. You're saying that that in and of itself will constitute persecution.
Well, Judge, the country conditions do reflect that the individuals with a disability like dwarfism they don't get all the protections that they deserve. They are they don't get the employment opportunities, they don't get admission to school, they don't have any of their special needs redressed. There's no there's no remedy for people who have disabilities, and this is part of the reason why he organized and created his own organization, because the government wasn't addressing any of their needs. All the articles that he submitted, also the other little people had the same issues. They were denied admission to school, they couldn't get a job, and there's a lot of discrimination, so it impacted their overall well-being, and the country condition does reflect that.
Did the IJ credit the little people particular social group as being a valid PSG?
I don't think that they disputed that it wasn't a valid particular social group. I just think that they dismissed because they said there wasn't sufficient persecution.
Right, but doesn't he have to have, and I'm using the common term, a PSG, doesn't he have to have a PSG here to get that? In other words, most of those deal with discrimination based on religion or political views and so on. How does being an, in quotes, little person fit into the PSG description?
Well, I mean, he meets all of the elements for a particular social group. I mean,
how would you describe how he meets those?
Well, I mean, visibly, first, I mean, which is something that we struggle with a lot in these types of cases. I mean, visibly, he's a little person, so he can be
okay,
distinguished.
I understand that, but there, as you know, there are five... If I recall correctly, there are five bases under which people can fit in a PSG.
Right.
Under which of those does being a, in quotes, little person, in quotes, fit?
Particular social group.
I understand. Well, that's what PSG is. So I'm asking you, on the five grounds that get to the PSG, into which of the categories does this gentleman fit? In other words, it's not based on religion, right?
No, it's not based on religion.
So what is it based on?
It's based on his particular social group, which is little people in Guatemala. That is his basis. That is the reason that he's being persecuted.
But for example, I know this is a physical characteristic, but if you said everybody that is left-handed in Guatemala, is that a particular social group?
I don't think so.
And why?
Well, I mean, there's different things that we look at. We look to see a visibility. Does the persecutor see him as different? Are there any country conditions
but I'm
that
saying,
protect these individuals?
But I'm saying there's that you're just saying they have to be different. Okay, I get that.
Well, he has to have an innate quality that is that he cannot change.
Okay, if you're left-handed, I think the percentages are like 10% in a population. So does that make you eligible for to be a PSG?
Well, the percentage doesn't matter. I mean, you could have 50%. So, I mean, it doesn't matter the amount of people. It's the quality that you can't change. You physically can't change this medical condition that he was born with. It's innate. He cannot change it.
Okay. So that's your best answer, that he qualifies as a member of a PSG?
Yes, Judge. His being a small person in Guatemala is a particular social group. It's valid. It meets all the elements. It's got an innate quality he cannot change.
And from your perspective and based on the law, what are the characteristics of a PSG? What does someone have to show in order to qualify as a member of a PSG?
Well, it has to be something that you can't change, has to be an innate quality, has to be specific, right? Specific that somebody, the persecutor can see you. It's distinct from other parts of the society.
They're unusual. Okay, let's get that. What else?
Well, I mean, that he's distinct, that you definitely can perceive.
That's the same thing. What else?
Some of the qualities overlap, Judge. I mean, the fact that he's a little person has a lot of the qualities that you would look at. So he's got an innate quality that he can't change because he's little. So just size. And then he's visually, you can see he's distinct from other groups because of his size.
If a person had one brown eye and one blue eye, would they be a member of a PSG?
Not necessarily, because...
Pretty unique.
It is unique.
Right.
It is unique, but I mean, that's not, I mean, I guess the argument is that this particular quality that he has is, you know, garnering a lot of discrimination, pervasive and persecution.
Isn't the answer to that question, it's how he or she is perceived and treated based on the physical condition.
Yes.
All right.
Do you want to save the balance of your time? You got
yes,
2
Judge,
minutes and
you.
So many seconds.
That's fine. Thank you, Judge.
If you want. Okay, very well. All right, let's hear from the government. Mr. Finn, I believe, right?
Yes, Judge, good morning. And may it please the court, Stephen Finn for the respondent, the Attorney General. The respondent's view on this case is this is a case where a Guatemalan citizen who was subject to removal, who was unable to demonstrate that he suffered past persecution, that he was persecuted on account of his political opinions, and that he was a member of a disfavored group. I would just note on the CAT claim, without going into it further, the record is absolutely devoid of any evidence to support an assertion that the petitioner would likely be tortured if we returned to Guatemala. So therefore, I'm not going to pursue any more argument on the CAT claim unless the court has specific questions.
The main question I have to do with the cumulative effect. It seems to me that your opponent is correct that the Carablina case is pretty important. Also, the Gua case, they both seem to suggest that if you don't have a cumulative effect analysis, even though the individual component may not rise to the level of persecution, that you've got a problem. You may have to reverse. What's the government's position on that? Since in this case, the IJ said, I'm not even going to do this. I'm not even going to make a cumulative effect analysis.
I don't recall where in the immigration judge's decision he said he was not going to make a cumulative effects analysis.
Let's say that's correct. Say he did say that.
Okay.
What's the immigration?
In preparing for my argument today, I took seriously that argument by counsel, and I started with the regulations, because the Attorney General and the Secretary of Homeland Security identify what are the things that we have to consider in a removal claim or a claim for asylum withholding in CAT. And nothing in the regs requires a cumulative analysis by the immigration judge. The board does have case law that talks about totality and cumulativeness for the purposes of appeal when they are reviewing the factual findings for clear error. This court's analysis on cumulative effects, in my review of the cases, what I was really looking for was the genesis of where that fits into the procedural considerations on review. And my view of it was it's part of a tool in the substantial evidence area to ensure that the immigration judge and the board are not looking at the trees and not seeing the forest.
Well, let's say you're right. Let me just quote you a single line from Carablina. It says, yes, a single isolated incident may not rise to the level of persecution, but the cumulative effect of several instances may constitute persecution. So that's our case law, and it controls.
Yes.
So
yes.
I guess you agree with that. So under those circumstances, if the IJ said, I'm not even going to consider cumulative effect analysis, what do we have to do?
Well, I don't know if it's a case of the immigration judge saying, I'm not going to consider it. I think Chenery tells us we have to look at the agency's decisions and evaluate the decisions based on what the agency said it did. And I would also say that comes up in the Ming Dai situation, that certainly the Supreme Court echoed that holding. And the question is here, is perhaps neither the board or the immigration judge said at the end of the day, we've looked at everything and we're making a separate cumulative analysis. But in both instances, the immigration judge and the board looked carefully at the claims that were before them. And the claim that was before them was a claim of asylum on the grounds of a particular social group. Now, first off, on that point, the immigration judge and the board found that there was no past persecution on the asylum claim. But I would note, it's correct that they bifurcated, in a sense, the facts. In the past persecution analysis, the board and the immigration judge looked essentially at harms that occurred prior to 2006. But then in the political opinion part of it, its analysis, it looked at claims that started with the death of the petitioner's brother. My argument here today is, notwithstanding that bifurcation, and there's a logic to that bifurcation, there were separate claims made here, regardless, in both cases, there wasn't the evidence to establish persecution. Most importantly,
counsel, if I might interrupt to get back to the judge's question. Our case law says, and Corablina and some others talk about the error at the agency and not looking at a cumulative effect. And that was the argument in Corablina. It's the argument here. Now, the agency didn't say we're not going to look at it, but it plainly did not articulate a cumulative effect analysis. Now, your argument today seems to me we don't need to do that, but that flies in the face of our controlling case law. So what do we do with that? Your argument is we just ignore it.
Well, no, Josh, I don't think I'm saying you just ignore it. I think that is a very tried and true position of the Ninth Circuit regarding the consideration of cumulative effects. But I go back to my argument earlier, which is this court talks about cumulative effects analysis within its own consideration of substantial evidence. In other words, there's an independent authority under 1252 for this court to evaluate claims for substantial evidence. And my reading of these cases, time and again, the court is within that substantial evidence review, and then it looks and says, well, yes, they've made their decisions, they've done the legal and factual analysis necessary, but they're not seeing the forest from the trees. They are not seeing that the cumulative effect of this persecution provide substantial, or excuse me, compels a different result.
Let me stop government counsel. So, let me stop government counsel for a second. Actually, what the IJ said was that he had, quote, undertaken to evaluate the nature of each claim the respondent presents in support of his contention he is eligible to receive asylum. But the immigration court has gone on to recognize that in every instance that Sosa may have experienced was nothing greater than discrimination focused on him. That was the finding of the IJ. So in other words, there is no evidence that the IJ failed to consider anything. However, what the IJ failed to perhaps say is, oh, and by the way, cumulatively, I've seen each one, they're insufficient. But he didn't say, oh, cumulatively, when I put them all together, it doesn't come up to snuff. So I think what the government is saying is that is the circuit going to require that the IJ say, not only I've considered everything in detail and it doesn't amount to persecution, it amounts at best to discrimination, and then to say, oh, by the way, all these acts in totality aren't sufficient also. Is that your argument?
Well, yeah. Yeah, Judge, yes, but I would go back to the fact that, in fact, the Attorney General sets up the procedures for the immigration judge to conduct its fact-finding, and it's a legal analysis. And there's nothing in the regulations that says there must be a cumulative effects analysis. And I recognize this court's long precedent on this question, but again, I've never seen a case that said we're sending this back to do this specific analysis. You must do cumulative effects analysis.
But the failure to do a cumulative analysis in certain situations can be error. You have to concede that.
In certain situations, again, my point on it, Your Honor, or Judge, is that in this court's review, not on appeal, appeal is to the board, review, the standard is substantial evidence that compels a different conclusion. And cumulative effects analysis is a portion and a partial aspect of that substantial evidence review.
Well,
Counsel, with respect,
I know this is a little different than what we would have in the normal district court situation for cumulative error, because you've got to have error before. Here we have a situation where our case law says that even if you have individual instances that do not in and of themselves rise to a level of persecution, that if you don't look at it cumulatively, you're in error because the aggregate of those individual things may constitute persecution. Your opposing counsel has made that point repeatedly, that this gentleman, because of his little person's situation, had all these various things that occurred, and in the aggregate, it constituted persecution. Now, the IJ may not agree with that. The IJ may say, nope, don't agree. But doesn't the IJ have to do that analysis under our case law?
And this, Judge, this is what I go back to the fact that my review of the cases never indicated that there was an obligation this court was putting on the immigration judge or the board to do the analysis. What was going on is the court was doing its own substantial evidence review under 1252. And
but how do you reconcile Carablina, for example? I quoted before what they said. And at least the way I read it, it's error if you don't do a cumulative analysis, even though the individual instances may not in and of themselves arise to the level of persecution. What am I missing?
I think we're just talking a little bit past each other's mind, Judge. I mean, I understand the court to be saying that the Ninth Circuit has held cumulative analysis as a requirement.
Okay.
What
constitutes cumulative analysis in this case? You've got these individual instances that the IJ and then the BIA say individually, these don't rise to persecution. But if you look at them cumulatively across the lifetime of this gentleman, why wouldn't that potentially at least warrant an analysis of whether that constitutes persecution?
I just want to be clear that my position is not that there's a requirement of cumulative effects analysis. My position is that this court has invoked cumulative effects under its substantial evidence analysis. Nevertheless, it's always appropriate for the court to say that you failed government in, or court in, excuse me for a moment, board and immigration judge, you failed because you did not, in your analysis, see that the total fact finding, your past persecution claim decision was incorrect, because in fact there was substantial evidence. In fact, there was past persecution because you did not look at all of the facts that were available to you. And therefore, a contrary conclusion is compelled upon the board, is from this record.
So go ahead, Judge Thomas.
Well, one of the other problems is the respondent, now the petitioner, did raise cumulative effects in the brief to the board. So it's not just a question of a mechanical application of our precedent. It's the question of, did you address the argument made by the now petitioner?
My response to that would be to go to Ming Dai, your judge. And that in Ming Dai, the court, the Supreme Court noted that, you know, you can't just come up with talismanic words to talk about something cumulative effects. You have to look what the board decided. And in this case, I would say that was not a persuasive argument to the board, or did it carry the burden of proof?
Yeah, well, Ming Dai was different because it was talking about the credit as true standard. This is
no question.
Our case law says if you raise an issue to the board should address it. Now they raised the issue to the board didn't address it, and they've raised the issue on appeal. Why shouldn't we say back, go address that issue?
Because the board and the immigration judge here considered all the factual assertions that were being made. And even if you total them all up, it doesn't rise. The harassment, discrimination, simply in this case, that never came close to the point of persecution, even stacked one on top of the other. And that's the fatal flaw here.
But they didn't say that. That's the problem you have, right? Individually, yes. But they did not say, when you put all these together, it does not rise to the level of persecution. And that's what our case law seems to require, is that they must analyze it in the aggregate if that is requested.
Given the fact that all of the factual assertions on discrimination and harassment, none of them rose to the level of persecution, none of them really even came very close, that I don't think it was incorrect in that circumstance. I don't think it would be worthwhile to remand when the board was so very clear that none of the assertions were rising to the level of persecution. Okay.
We've run out of time.
I do have a question. A quick question. The government concedes that both the IJ and the BIA applied the wrong standard in deciding the withholding of removal aspect. The government's conceded that. Is that correct?
Consistent with our brief, Judge, yes, we concede it, but we believe that remand would not be appropriate.
Okay, you said you can get around the remand because of the fact that you said that the BIA or someone had made an adverse finding as to credit, that he was not credible. But the BIA noted that, quote, the IJ did not make an explicit adverse credibility finding. So there is no adverse credibility finding as to the aliens. Isn't that correct?
Judge, my apologies on the brief. My use of adverse credibility was inartful because he did not make a statutorily required adverse credibility finding. However, nonetheless, it's unequivocal that the immigration judge and the board made a credibility finding regarding his assertions that he had been threatened when he was robbed based on his being a dwarf. Those are very clear in the decisions, that those portions were not found to be credible.
All right. Thank you.
Judge Thomas, do you have any additional questions?
I do not.
Okay, thank you for that argument. So, counsel for Mr. Sosa, you have a little of rebuttal time.
Judge, I would just ask this court to reject the government's position. To me, it seems that they refuse to apply this court's precedent in terms of the cumulative effect of all of the incidents that Mr. Salguero suffered. And the case law is very clear that the agency must look at everything that's happened to him and look at it cumulatively to
see
if he suffered persecution.
Let me stop you, counsel. If the government does look at it, BIA and the board look at it, and the IJ look at it cumulatively, what exactly else should they have done? I mean, they should say, yeah, we've looked at it cumulatively, but what actually, how is the analysis to be done?
Well, if they looked at everything, then they would have found that there was past persecution.
No, they didn't. They found the individuals did not, right. The individual situations.
Look at everything together.
Okay, but what is it about everything together that would make it, the result, looking at it cumulatively, different than when they looked at it individually? I'm too intense. Okay. What difference would it make?
Well, again, Your Honor, I think the difference would have been that if they looked at all of the incidents cumulatively, then they would have found there was past persecution.
Why?
Because the record shows that he had severe and pervasive discrimination throughout his life, plus death threats, plus confrontations, and the forced abortion.
They considered
all that. Look at all that. All they said is this is discrimination, just like they did in Korablina.
All right. Counsel, let me ask you this. According to your understanding, did your client specifically ask the IJ and the BIA to do a cumulative effect analysis?
Yes, Judge.
Okay. Do you know where in the record that was done?
On appeal, we said that the agency didn't look at all of the factors.
I understand. Where did you say that, in your brief or in the record?
Well, it's in several areas. I mean, it's obviously on the appeal and then in our opening.
Okay, so it's from your perspective, it was requested.
Yes, Judge.
Okay.
And regards to another issue that the government raised, saying that none of the factors or the harms that he said would have risen. Again, there's no distinction, meaningful distinction from Korablina, because they have a lot of the same factors. The denied admission to school, not being able to get a good job, only having one physical attack.
Okay.
And all of that.
I think we have that, and your time is up. But let me ask my colleagues whether either has additional questions for counsel for petitioner. Okay. Thanks both, counsel, for your argument. We appreciate it. The case just argued is submitted.